Hello, and welcome to Eyes on Success, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpey and Peter Torpey.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. This week we have a story we think you'll really enjoy about a man who was a fully sighted policeman when he suddenly lost his sight. But undaunted, he continued in his career, and you'll hear both this week and continued next week about his very positive attitude about being blind and making the transition to blindness and how that had an interesting effect on him and his colleagues.
We'll be speaking with Marlon Parejo this week mostly about his transition to blindness and how he continued in his career as a police officer, and next week mostly about his thoughts about being blind and what it's meant to him. But first, for our tip of the week, this week's tip comes from Marlon Parejo.
Who has that first touch with blindness, especially those who get blind later on, they go through pretty much the same thing. And that's what my welfare officer would have told me initially. You are not singular.
Yeah.
Yeah. So don't feel like, you know, your situation is so unique. And that's why you have to feel sorry for yourself and grovel and stuff. So I just did my groveling for a month. And then I kind of picked myself up after that.
So Marlon talks about his welfare officer in his country. In the U.S., that would correspond to many of the state and national social service agencies that help blind people make their transitions and accommodations.
So he fully admitted, as you've already heard, that when he first got the news that he was blind and there was nothing they could do about it, he was pretty upset. But as you'll hear in the rest of this week's episode and next week's episode, he's really turned that around and has come to terms with it and has even made it a positive thing.
Support for Eyes on Success is provided by
eSight, maker of digital eyewear designed to help improve vision for people with low vision and legal blindness. The technology can be used to read, see faces, and explore the world. More information is available at eSightEyewear.com. Let's start by meeting Marlon.
My name is Marlon Parejo. I live in Trinidad and Tobago. It's in the Caribbean, very close to Venezuela. It's two islands, one country.
So tell us a little bit about how you started out in your profession and what you did.
Well, I was as a cop. I've been a cop for 14 years. Four of those years I've been blind. But what I basically do is receive information from persons and translate it into reports. And I also do a bit of social intervention where I talk to like troubled kids, and I actually use my impairment as a motivational and inspirational tool.
So this is the same job that you had before you went blind, right?
Oh, no, not really. I also used to be a sketch artist. I used to draw persons from someone's description.
Well, that would be difficult if you can't see.
It's almost near impossible. But I heard about a guy that does draw and paint, so if he can do it, I could do it too. I can't say that I will be able to do it for police work, because I'm pretty sure that will be a problem when it gets to court.
And you are currently visually impaired, but I take it you had vision at one point in your life.
Yes, I've had vision for most of my life, actually. I've been blind for 4 years. I got blind at 31.
Was that due to a disease or an accident or what?
It was due to glaucoma. Glaucoma and ignorance. What happened is that I was informed that I had glaucoma, but I never really took it on that much. It's only when I started to research it for myself, because it was going rapidly, and by the time I got the information that I needed, it was already too late.
Oh, that's really too bad, because that's a reasonably treatable disease these days.
Yes, it is.
So have you lost all of your vision then, or do you have some left over?
All of it.
Wow.
Wow.
That must have been a tough transition.
Yes. Yes, it was. I am not ashamed to say that I was crying like a, well, not like a baby. I was crying like a grown man in front of the hospital when I was given the diagnosis of doom. Yeah, I was told to send you are legally blind, and there's nothing that can be done. Even if you do the surgery, you will not regain any of the sight that you've lost. The most that will happen is that you release the pressure, which can be done with these drops.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. 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 Success.
This week's focus topic is how Marlon was able to successfully navigate the transition from being fully sighted to being totally blind while retaining his position as a police officer.
After you got the diagnosis of being blind, which must have been quite a shock, what advice did the doctors give you?
He said, if I go outside, that I'll get some forms for Blind Welfare Association of Trinidad and Tobago, and good luck to you. That's how I got it. It's not very pleasant, but that's pretty much how it is.
So they just sort of threw you out there in the world on your own to see how you could adjust?
Yes. I don't think they even cared if I adjust. You see, what happens is that most of the doctors, they are trained to give you diagnosis, but not too much with the whole counseling part of it. I don't think they even know a lot about coping with blindness and so on. And they just pushed me along up the chain. So I've done my part, so you go ahead.
Yeah, and we've talked about that many times on this show, that doctors kind of treat what the symptoms are, and either they can fix you or they can't.
Yes.
But they don't know how to refer you to the services and resources that can really help you. And there are a lot of services and resources out there that can be very helpful.
So the doctor referred you to your local Blind Welfare Association. Why did you not want to go there?
That's where the problem lies. You see, what happens is that I knew that there was such a thing called the Blind Welfare Association of Trinidad and Tobago. However, there is a stigma attached to it. You see, they have a workshop. I learned that later on, that make baskets. And because the baskets are more to the forefront, that is what sighted people associate blindness with. You have to go there and make baskets for the rest of your life, which is pretty much why I was crying in the first place, because I told myself, I have to leave my job and make baskets for the rest of my life. I did not know that blind people could have used computers. I did not know that they would have taught people how to use computers there. I didn't even know blind persons could have used a phone. If somebody told me 4 or 5 years ago that blind people can't do this, I would have laughed and said they are crazy. But here I am.
What happened at work when you told them that you had gone blind?
I was told, listen, why don't you take a medically unfit? Because you can take a leave of absence where you stay at home and you receive 3/4 of your salary. But I told them, listen, I want to go out, because if I'm at home because I can't leave, I'm living in a prison. If I'm at home because I want to stay home, well, yes. But if I'm at home simply because I'm too afraid to leave, I am living in a prison. So I started mobility, walking to the first corner and then running back home. Then the next day, I walked to the second corner and then I ran back home. And before you know it, I'm taking 3 different sets of transports to get to work. The first time I got to work unassisted, it was great, because people were like, who came for you? I'm like, no, I traveled pretty much. I'm like, what? You really? It's like, yeah. So now it has become normal. When Marlon goes to get something, yeah, I'm going out to so-and-so. I'm going out to the mall. I'm going to drop some mail off. And it's like, okay, no problem.
Well, everybody wants to feel productive and a part of society. So
yes,
that sounds like it's working out really well.
Yes, it is. And it's almost like it's not enough. I keep always scouring the internet looking for other stuff. I've gone on Mac Power Users now and to try to see if I could be even more productive. Because, you know, there are still issues that, you know, you may want to polish up on. But assistive technology has assisted me greatly.
So how did you finally make the transition and find out how to get the skills that enabled you to continue on in your job?
Well, what happened is that for a while where I work, they basically, you know, accommodated me out of sympathy. You know, you're just come to work and, you know, we'll work out something. My job entails a lot of report writing, and I had to ask someone to write it out for me whilst I dictate. And then a friend of mine who has a cousin that works at the Blind Welfare told me, listen, you know that they are blind, could use a computer, right? And I was like, no, that's not true. All they do is make baskets. Don't try to get me there. I was like, no, it's true. And after a while, I think it was about a month, I really got fed up of dictating my reports to someone else, because if I'm doing that, then he can't get his work done. I have my work to do, but he also has his work to do as well.
Yeah, that's no fun.
Yeah, that dependency, I couldn't take that. I wanted to do it for myself. So I went there, I met with the welfare officer, and she introduced me to a young lady by the name of Janelle Ramdas. She was the computer teacher at the time. I was very skeptical. And the first thing I asked her, are you blind? And she said, yes. And I said, okay, cool. And then she showed me how JAWS work. And from there, it just shot off.
So I take it these days you use a computer and a screen reader to do your work and use a cane to get around, and you're reasonably well adapted to being blind.
Of course. Once I realized that this can be done, I asked her, I said, listen, Janelle, can you tell me how long does it take for someone to learn JAWS? She said, 3 months. I said, okay, great. I'm going to learn this in a month. Because at that point, I'm thinking that my job was on the line. I had one kid and another one coming up. I had to make sure that I can see about them. And I was, every day I was coming, learning it. And before you know it, in less than a month, I learned it. But the thing with that is that I started to get more curious and more hungry about what else is possible for a blind person to do using assistive technology.
So it sounds like you have availed yourself of many of the technologies that are available to help the visually impaired. What other gadgets or technologies did you find useful?
I got a Nokia phone called the Nokia E71, and they would install a program called Talks on it. And from there, I started to go on YouTube. Because what happens is that I needed, you know, to know that someone is doing something. At that time, all you had to tell me that a blind person did it already. And that was good enough for me. If they could do it, I could do it.
Having an existence proof that something is possible makes it a little bit easier for the next person to actually accomplish that task or do whatever they want to do.
Of course. Of course. And I went on YouTube and I just typed in blind. And from there, I got to learn about, you know, the iPhone. Now, I had an iPhone before when I could have seen. And I, you know, I would have just, you know, upgraded to different phones. But I was like, wait, hold on. How can a blind person use a phone that pretty much has no buttons? It's just the screen. And I started researching and researching and researching. And before you know it, I was going on to podcasts. And that was just it. I just bounced from podcast to podcast to podcast. And then, boom, all of a sudden, I'm on a podcast called Eyes on Success. And I'm listening to all these different people doing all these different things. So I'm craving every Wednesday, you know, listening, waiting. You would be surprised. I just wait for the email, you know, to see what else new, you know, it has and what other resource that it has, because it's so much. So now I have an iPhone. I have an iPad. I have two MacBooks. I have a Mac Mini. Sometimes I'll carry my MacBook to work. Sometimes I'll carry just my phone and my Bluetooth keyboard to work. And I pretty much get a lot of stuff done. So I have graduated from me asking somebody to dictate something to them to somebody asking me to type out stuff for them because I type it a lot faster than them.
Fantastic.
The average individual at my job types with one finger at a time. You know those people, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I was outside and I was tapping away and he's like, wait, what are you doing? Because I'm hearing the letters. Like, I say, I'm typing. Yeah, but you're typing so fast. I'm like, well, yeah. I could see and I can't type like that. I'm like, well, I don't know. Close the eyes, I guess. I don't know.
You almost make it sound like it was pretty easy making the transition to blindness, but there must have been some difficulties or some reticence about being blind.
Yes, believe it or not, there was a time that I used to pretend to see. There's a part of it that's a lot of shame involved. And usually that happens when you're a cop, when you're a police officer, because you have this sort of pride attached to it, you know, you're a police officer. You know, so now that you're blind, you're ashamed that people will watch you in a particular way. And there was a time I used to walk the street and hold on to walls and hold on to buildings. And then a day, I just laughed at myself. And I said, Marlon, you are afraid to hold a cane because you're afraid that people are going to watch you and laugh. Aren't you doing something now that people will laugh anyway? People are going to laugh at you walking, holding onto walls. Get a cane. I mean, they're not going to be laughing forever, you know. And my welfare officer told me that you need to start traveling on your own. I travel to and from work every day, and I love it immensely. I have been offered, you know, like someone say, well, we send a police car for you. I was like, no, that makes no sense because that car and that driver could be used for something more important. I can travel. I mean, it'll take me a lot longer, but I can travel, you know. So, and I started traveling. Initially, when my welfare officer told me, listen, you need to start traveling. And that was in another association called PAVI, Persons Associated with Visual Impairment. She told me, how do you get here? I said, well, my father carries me. And you know what she told me? She said, oh, you have one of those fathers that live forever. And that made me understand, listen, I need to start traveling on my own. And I had all the excuses. I said, listen, I have arrested so many people. They're going to see me and they're going to hurt me. Yeah, right. After a while, in the 3-4 years I've been traveling on my own, 5 people who I arrested helped me cross the street already. 5. And they told me that I arrested them already, which was sort of funny, you know. So, I mean, I just keep going because, I mean, people say that you'll get robbed. It's like, okay, no problem. But sighted people get robbed all the time. So what makes you so special?
How has the attitude of your colleagues at work changed as you went through this transition?
It changed along with me. There were times when I was adamant I had to get to the mall myself or get to places on my own that people were literally walking behind me. I could have felt them behind me, you know, and they told me later on that they were walking and hiding behind poles. And I was like, why would you hide behind a pole? If I turn around, it's not like I'm going to see you
right.
or anything, but they are naturally protective.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would go into a taxi and they would look at the license plate, you know, to make sure, and then they would call to make sure that I got home and so on, you know.
Wow, it sounds like they were more afraid of what might happen to you than you were.
There was a time that I was walking and a driver dropped me off a distance from where I was going, and I got a bit confused. And after that, I got blind square after your podcast. And I was pickpocketed. And I said, I got pickpocketed. I lost my wallet. And people were all, oh my goodness, we have to send a figure. Like, no, I mean, sighted people get pickpocketed all the time. What makes it so different with me? I just need to do things a little different. Because even now, I still do things as a sighted person. I put my wallet in my back pocket, which is a definite no-no. You know, now I have a messenger bag.
Now, see, my father was a policeman. And when I traveled through big cities on public transportation, he taught me at a very early age, put your wallet in your front pocket.
Well, I didn't get that pep talk. So, you know, I lost a lot. I lost my police ID and all that stuff. So
you make this all sound very easy, but surely there must be some difficulties that you have to overcome. And what happens when you face a challenge like that?
Sometimes you're going to do something and it's not going to work out. But that's actually a good thing because at least you know that you're definitely not going to do it that way. So, like, for example, I know for a fact that there are 25 light poles from my first taxi stop to my second taxi stop. I tell people that in my motivation speeches because I say, how do you think I knew that it has 25 light poles? When nobody answers it, that's because I walked into all of them at one time. But the next day, I walked into 10. And the next day, I walked into 3. And the next day, I walked into none.
And it wasn't because they were taking out light poles.
Oh, yeah, those light poles. I even have a blog where I gave the light pole a character. And it's like, why is this person walking into me? I'm not moving from here. I was here before him. And that was one of the things that the mobility teacher tells you. The light pole was there before. Don't get angry at the light pole. The light pole was there before you. Walk around the light pole.
So I take it your colleagues have gotten over some of those initial attitudes and are treating you more normally these days. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Some of those guys, they play a lot. They pass and they, you know, they would poke and run. They're very playful sometimes. Obviously, they have to get accustomed to leaving their desk drawers closed, you know.
Yes, right. Chairs pushed in.
Yes. I have the cuts on my shins to show for it, right? There's a guy, when I go to use the bathroom, he always sees my foot and steps on it and runs away laughing, you know, but it's all in fun. Some people even try to be quiet and stuff because now I can literally, some persons I can know by scent and by walking, and they're like, you know, that's like a modern day superhero. And I keep telling them it's basic common sense, really.
Yeah. Well, mm-hmm. I think it's great when people get to the attitude where they can actually joke about these things and take it a little bit more lightly and not just hide behind it.
Yeah.
I mean, often people are afraid to ask questions or interact with you. And it sounds like you're in a great position with your colleagues now.
Yeah, not them. They will ask you, how do you use the bathroom? They will ask you all sorts of stuff. You understand that? They'll say, let me know if I'm asking you nonsense. And I was like, yeah, sure, no problem. You know, so it's really cool.
Cool.
I'm glad about the people at my job because they went through the motions with me. It had a lot of fear involved because where I work is opposite a mall and the mall has a food court. So I would have to ask someone, are you going to the mall? Are you going to get lunch? So I pretty much have to wait on them until I got fed up and decided I want to do it on my own. So before, when I went to the mall, people were like, we're going to get somebody to go with you because I have to cross the street. Now, when I'm going to the mall, I was like, yeah, I'm going to get something. Oh, yeah, when you're coming back, I need to get this, I need to get that. And I actually go and get stuff for sighted people. And people at the mall were like, that building that you work at, because I don't wear a uniform. I basically, it's a plain clothes, you know, section. So people already know just by looking at me if I'm a police officer or not. So they would ask, all those people, they are blind people? They're like, no. You are buying all of these things for you? Like, no. So wait, you are buying stuff for people who could see? Like, yeah, pretty much. And as from there, that's why I started with the podcast to write about these things, because these things are so funny, you would be surprised. Well, at least I find it funny.
That's great.
Is there anything you do not do as a police officer besides that you gave up being a sketch artist?
I think that is the biggest issue. The first thing they think is like, so you have a gun? Like, no, I don't. You see, obviously, I don't go direct in traffic. That would be horrible. And I don't go kicking down doors and doing drug busts and so on. That would be unreasonable. But fighting crime is usually dealing with the young persons in society, the young persons that want to go into a gang for one reason or the other.
So you've mentioned a couple of things that you don't do as a police officer. What are some of the things that you do do?
Sometimes when people bring in the kids and they're brought to me, for the first 10 minutes, they don't know that I'm blind unless I tell them. I literally have my computer there, my Bluetooth headset, paired with the computer, and I'm typing away and I'm listening and I'm listening. I ask, do you want coffee? And I make coffee for them. They tend to get confused as to the beep because I have a liquid level indicator for that. And I hand them it, and they were talking. And when they're finished talking about, you know, all the issues and stuff, and it's like, I close the computer and say, yeah, okay, I'm blind. And that's usually how the counseling starts. And by the time I'm done, the kid is like, well, maybe my situation isn't as bad as I think, because you're blind and you seem pretty much chipper. And I have all my faculties, as it were, and I'm complaining, I'm crying and stuff, and blaming everybody and stuff. So, you know, and I keep in contact with them, and a lot of them do pretty well.
It must enable you to make a very instant and deep rapport with these people on a very different level.
Instant like coffee.
Yeah, neat. It sounds like the blindness is a real asset in this case.
Yes, because you see, it, rather than make things into an obstacle, use it as a stepping stone. I mean, I ask myself, what are you good at? And say, well, I can be good at being blind.
Right. And you can use that as a tool sometimes also.
Yeah, I can use it as a tool. And I have been using it as a tool. Mm-hmm. Because there are people who complain and complain and complain. And I mean, complaining is something that comes natural. But is it really helping anybody? Is it helping you? Is it making your life any better? Is it making anybody's life any better? So if I can save one kid from joining a gang, then I am doing my part in the fight against crime.
Yep.
Yeah, so I'm pretty much, you know, doing my job. And I'm talking and we're laughing. And then the child goes and says, Mom, you know he's blind? And they're like, oh, come on, don't be ridiculous. And stuff. I mean, if you come into my office, you will not know the difference, because I know my office so well, I don't walk with a cane. The only way you'll know the cane is when I'm going out. I have assisted persons visiting to the bathroom and everything, mm-hmm. and things like that. Some even thought, is he undercover? Is he undercover as a blind person? They don't understand that. Listen, I can hear you.
Right. They don't realize the blind person can hear.
Yeah.
Unless you raise your voice.
Right.
Yeah.
When we were trying to schedule this interview, you said, well, I can't do it on Monday. I'll be in court on Monday. I gather you still go to court and you participate in hearings?
Yep. And every time I go, it's the same crazy. I mean, the time when I went on Monday, it was a time that I arrested a guy for murder. I just knew there was a warrant for him about 7 years ago when I could have seen. Lo and behold, now, you know how sometimes court matters drag on. I'm subpoenaed to court to give evidence against the guy. So I said, okay. So I walked in with the cane. And that was a whole lot of drama, because people were confused. Some asked if I were a juror. Like, nope. Okay, well, I see you have a subpoena here. And I say, yeah, well, the constable there, that's me. Say, that's you? Yep, that's me. And it's really funny to see how people get all confused, and at the same time, they don't want to say something that's insensitive.
Right.
and you know that they're all mushy inside and they're wondering how to treat with you, and I'm just laughing on the inside. But I basically went up on the witness stand and just explained what I did. And the funny thing is that the whole issue of, you know, where people feel sympathy for a person with a vision impairment sort of worked in my favor, in that, you know, how some attorneys have a tendency, you know, to raise their voices and stuff. The judge basically stopped them at every turn. Listen, you don't have to scream. He can hear you. I was just laughing.
So as you've heard, in spite of going blind fairly suddenly, Marlon really didn't have a lot of trouble continuing in his career. And next week, we'll talk mostly about the rest of his life. Now for this week's final item, how you can read some of Marlon's writings and how to contact him.
So if people wanted to contact you, could they do that?
Yes, they could. I'm on Twitter, but there's some numbers next to my name and I can't recall it. Also, you can email me at nrkey98@gmail.com. That's nrkey98@gmail.com. I'm also on Facebook, the name Marlon Parejo. It's MarlonPareiEho. That's my personal page. And there's also a regular page that's The Blind Way Forward. On that page, I have copies of the blog as well, because I've linked the WordPress account to Facebook, but it also has videos. I have like video interviews and so on. And I even have a video with me rappelling down a 400-foot cliff. That was fun.
And Marlon's blog is very insightful and often very humorous. So you can find that and all of the other references and contact information that he talked about by going to our show notes at www.eyesonsuccess.net.
That's it for show number 1612. Next week, we'll continue our conversation with Marlon Parejo and focus mostly on his thoughts on blindness and why going blind suddenly didn't turn out to be a disaster as he initially feared that it might. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net or call us at 585-210-8094.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman Torpey and Peter Torpey, and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio. Browse the full archive of programs, find instructions for subscribing to the podcasts, and much more at www.eyesonsuccess.net. You can also find us on iTunes, follow us on Facebook and on audioboom.com at Eyes on Success, or Twitter at @_EyesOnSuccess. We hope you will join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Eyes on Success, and have a nice day.